The Rabbis Podcast is powered by Coachella Media. Go to www.coachellamedia.com for all your digital marketing needs.
This is the Rabbis Podcast.
It's geschmack to be a hit.
Hi, this is Rabbi Pinchas Landis of Partners in Torah of Cleveland, and I am here with my co-hosts, Rabbi Gamliel Nassan Halevi Shlita of Yeshivas Avos Torah. That's Gamliel Nassan Halevi Spiro. I missed the last name.
Right.
That's you, right? That's your name?
That is my
okay,
name.
Got it. Of Yeshivas Avos Torah, and we're back.
You give me such confidence, Rabbi Landis, when you say Shlita, and I feel so good about myself, and I think maybe really I am a Gadol B'Torah, and then...
And then, you know, you just go home, and it's all down
I'm
from
not.
There.
But we have... This has been a long time. This has been a very shvacha summer, very weak summer for
the podcast.
I almost call it Rabbis Without Borders, but
no.
I don't want to get sued.
Don't get sued.
For the Rabbis Podcast... And
we apologize for that. It's
yes,
just,
we're
you know,
sorry.
Baruch
a lot
Hashem.
Of Rabbi Landis was institutionalized part of the summer.
I was. it was rough. We're not going to talk about that.
He got a clean bill of health.
For now. You know, I just basically learned how to fool them after a certain amount of time.
So, yeah, but we missed everybody. We apologize, and we're going to get back to our once a week schedule. And I want to make a little announcement. I plan to be starting soon independently. A daily Navi podcast. That means we're going to have three podcasts on this network. Rabbi Landis is clapping. Rabbi Landis is daily history, Jewish history podcast.
Right, today in Jewish history,
which I think is very
over 10,000 subscribers.
Our weekly podcast of Rabbi's podcast, and a daily Navi podcast. That will be three daily podcasts.
Three weekly podcasts.
Two daily, one weekly, but three podcasts on our. Podcast
on our
network.
And we're gonna right. And we're building that out as a network. So we stay tuned for what the URL is gonna be to find out.
We're
that.
Looking for someone also. We're looking for a podcast on classic 80s board games.
Yes, definitely.
Someone
Shoots and Ladders.
Shoots and Ladders, Parcheesi,
Monopoly.
Trouble. So if you feel you're an expert, Mousetrap, what's that game called?
Mousetrap.
That was a great
one.
Game.
You say Hungry Hippo? You get that one?
Yeah, I know that. I don't like that guy. I like Mousetrap. I didn't like the game, but I liked at the end when you would make the guy would dive off the thing and the ball would roll on the thing and they'd cover
cool.
the mouse.
But Rabbi
so,
Spirit, while,
yeah,
while
we're looking
for
a podcast on that.
While we're on the subject, it's very important. I don't know if you're familiar with this, but what are your feelings on the rebranding of Monopoly? How you can get like I know in Atlanta they sell Techopoly. Like it's all Georgia Tech.
This year,
I'm sure they have Yeshivas Avos Torahopoly.
So on Yeshiva trip, we saw at the state park in Glacier National Park in Montana, they have state park Monopoly.
So what are your feelings on that?
I like it.
You know, I'm torn because I love Monopoly and I'm definitely an authenticist and everything. So, you know, I expect Boardwalk and Park Place and these things to be where they are. So it's a little unsettling for me, but I do like the hispashtus of Monopoly to other places. So it's, I'm kind of torn on it. I don't know.
I don't know. When I was a kid, a lot of Jews used to go to Atlantic City in the summer. They used to have very famous kosher restaurant called Teplitsky's. Anyone who remembers that in the early 80s, 70s, 80s. So we'd go in the summer, we'd go to Atlantic City, and we would pass by these streets, and I would be amazed. Like, hey, I'm sure you know the Monopoly's based on Atlantic City.
Exactly.
And I'd be amazed. My father would show me
there's this boardwalk, and this
Atlantic Avenue and all these different streets. I was amazed. I don't know. Atlantic City is a very not hush of a city in many different ways.
Well, now for sure.
So I don't know why they even then it was never such a great. It was always
By the way, I did hear they're building a new hotel there called the Obama.
Oh really?
You hear about that? No, not really. But I figured they got the Trump and the Obama.
So I always why should they get all the credit? Yeah. So we I think every they have thousands of them different monopolies.
Yeah, different monopolies. But okay. So you're okay with that? I'm a little torn. So and
I'll be honest. I don't have such strong feelings on Monopoly in the first place.
No?
Think about it so much.
The other thing that really this can is a debate I have with my kids, and that is, do you really follow the Monopoly rules, or do you follow like
no one follows Monopoly rules?
Like the whole thing. There's no free parking.
There's no free parking.
There's
no,
Monopoly. There is just free parking. There's no money. There's no $500.
No
snake
if
eyes.
You land
there's
on
no,
Go. You don't get $400.
Right. You just get $200. Exactly.
Yeah, that's the stupid way of playing.
But it's interesting. But it's you see how that's become. It's become
the rules have changed. You know why? Because people are looking for more action. That's one of the reasons why baseball is having trouble in this country.
Yeah.
Because they feel there's not enough action. They're trying to make new rules now. How long a pitcher can wait between pitches. How long the batter can wait.
Yeah,
because people can't take the delays.
And one of the problems, that's inside baseball.
Right, but Monopoly is if you follow the rules 100%. Also, there's no borrowing money from the bank. We as kids would always, when a guy didn't have any money, he would borrow money from the bank and pay it back. Really, Monopoly, once you don't have money, you're bankrupt and the game is over.
You have to mortgage your properties.
And, right. But once you have nothing left, you can't play the game anymore. You're out of the right. game.
There's also that's some the funky with the houses and hotels that no one does. I forget what it is. Something over there. Anyhow.
Yeah. I don't,
this is just a teaser.
I'm a rebel.
This is a teaser for when we get that podcast going. And
the 80s board game
by
podcast.
By the way, you know who I think might do that? Rabbi Adler. I think this Rabbi is a Adler, wonderful
you're saying
way.
You should be the 80s board
this
game
is
podcast.
A wonderful way to bring Rabbi Adler onto the network. I think we got to do it.
That's an interesting idea.
Ruchi, can you work on that for us, please?
I've seen him playing Candyland at home many times alone. He plays a three-man game of Candyland. He does all three characters.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah, so, and you mentioned the Chutes and Ladders competition that you've had.
100%.
And I know that's
I have
that's
to love
intense.
That game. Really, if you want to, life can be distilled into Chutes and Ladders, but that's a whole other separate discussion. Oh, but I have a complaint of the week this week.
Uh-oh. One second. We have a complaint of the week. Let's go. Let's do it.
So the complaint of the week is, this summer I was in Montreal with my wife for a few days.
Is that the complaint?
No. Okay. I want to tell you something. This is a separate schmooze. All cities are overrated. That's what I've decided.
All cities are overrated. Cities, except for Yerushalayim or Kodesh.
I don't mean that. But I'm talking about in America, I'm into going to out west and to beautiful places.
100%. And I went out west this summer and it was beautiful.
When you go to, where'd you go?
I went to Las Vegas for about 24 hours.
Vegas is a great city. Nevada, I'm talking about.
All I got to say is even the strip, I would say like this. If you have to know yourself. But if you can go there and really appreciate the architecture and like the volcanoes and all that stuff, it's impressive. Now, again, all that's there to try and get you to do things right. You shouldn't be doing.
I've been in Vegas. I've always stayed away from the Strip. I've been to Nevada a few times.
Nevada's beautiful. The air is beautiful. You drive out to I forget the area where the
Lake
from
Mead is amazing. It's a beautiful place.
Yeah.
But all cities are essentially the same thing, I've decided. And Montreal has a huge mila, but a huge chasaron. What's the huge mila? There's great food in Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, there's New York style pizza. Great pizza shop, Pizza Pita. If you ever have a chance to go to Montreal, go there.
Do they serve
amazing
french fries
pizza.
At the New York style
they serve
pizza?
Poutine.
Is that like real french
fries? Poutine is french fries and gravy and cheese. And
oh,
it's
that's
amazing.
Like the real like french.
It's Canadian thing, french Canadian thing, yeah. Whatever. And Montreal has, they have smoked beef. It's a great city to go
they
for that.
They also apparently have filet mignon, which is not easy to get kosher because most people don't do the nikor.
Really?
There's apparently a place there where they do nikor. They do the removing of the hindquarters, whereas most of our shlachtas here in America
remove the entire piece.
Right. They sell off the back, the hindquarter just to treif and don't even worry about it because they feel it's not worth it. But in Montreal apparently...
But so yeah, I did not have that, but I did have smoked beef, which was amazing. But I'll tell you what the bad part of Montreal is. They speak French. And that's what my son-in-law's from Montreal. My son-in-law actually speaks French, not well, but he can get by in French.
He's a great guy.
This is what I decided. There's really three languages. There's Hebrew, English, and Yiddish. Yeah. There's no other language that has any importance
Aramaic.
At all. I'm not saying Aramaic is for learning Gemara, but right. no one speaks. I don't think it's spoken by anyone in the world. And I think we need to eliminate, there's too many languages happening in the world. I think we need to eliminate some of them and leave the only languages Hebrew, English, and Yiddish. I don't know if the rest of the world would agree with that. But my taina is, when you go to Montreal, it's really it's amazing. It is a French city.
100%. I was there once for a chasana for a boy from my shul in Cincinnati. And he's a Sephardi boy. He's marrying a Sephardi girl. At the chas, and I didn't understand one thing that was going on because it's both Sephardi and right. French and French.
What I found amazing is at the pizza shop, I realized like the Ashkenazim, like you saw Yeshivisha guys there, guys mm-hmm. learning Kyle there, Yeshivisha families.
They all speak French.
They spoke English.
Oh, they said, right, the Ashkenazim, right, right.
But Sephardim, right. I saw a family, Yeshivisha Sephardim, yeah. sitting there at the pizza shop.
Who's
the
pizza? Which is
talking in French to each other. I actually went over to them and said, this is, I'm not okay. I'm not down with this.
Mocha.
No other languages but Hebrew, English, and Yiddish.
So essentially, I was at the chasna. This was
Arabic, beautiful language, and Rachi Adler speaks it.
Really? Wow. Cool. So this is this was Guy Ben Chur. He's a Steigen. I think he's still in the Kollel there in Montreal. if I remember correctly. Anyway, so he married a nice, sweet girl from Montreal. Now, he had become from with our shul and other stuff, and she became from on campus in Montreal. So the one who was a makari of her was an Ashkenazi rabbi. So I happened, you know, misery loves company. I sat next to him during the chuppah, and it's a good thing I did because, like, you know, they called him up for a bracha, and then they called me, which was great because he went up and made a nice Ashkenazi bracha and made me feel better because if I gone up there and I wouldn't have known what to do, trying to say like a Sephardi, yeah. But it would have been rough. I hear what you're saying. You know, languages are interesting because certain languages are you can tell what's important to a culture by the language. And I often, you know, with Lashon HaKodesh, for sure, we have many different words for happiness in Lashon HaKodesh. We have many different words for Hashem, for the Almighty, in Lashon HaKodesh. We have, because these are things that are important to us. You know, and Inuit, for example, they have like 25 words for snow. You know what Inuit is, right?
Right.
This language of Eskimos. It's, you know, there's wet snow and dry snow and hard snow and hot snow.
Eskimos,
right, exactly. You were doing shlichas up there. And hot snow and getting buried in snow, you know, and then German. Like, German's a great language for just like utter hatred. You know, Achen, Bachen, Machen, Zachen, Bachen, you know, and then French is like, you can like curse someone out in French and it sounds like you're saying, I love you, because that's what they do. But I agree with you. I think we should, you know, this is the problem with Migdal Bavel, with the Tower of Babel, that it was Mibabel Asa'ilam, it was mixed up the languages. The
people used to speak essentially one language.
It was one language, and it was, you know, Stam, Lashon, Akedish, and that's how the world should be, and hopefully we'll get back to that. By the way, it's an interesting question, just to take this a little, you know, one second, we got to give you a little, just on that complaint of the week, let's give you a laugh. There you go.
I can't even hear it.
So yeah, so Rabbi Spiro, by the way, here in the studio, refuses to wear monitoring headphones, which I think are very important for the quality of the show, but he doesn't do it. Anyhow, so I do it, and I can hear the sound effects, but he doesn't hear it till he listens when he gets home. But one thing, where was I going with this? What was I saying before I gave you the laugh on the complaint
about
of the week?
About languages.
Languages and German and French and... I don't remember. I was going to say something about language. Right. I was going to ask you a question about when the Geula comes, B'mehei Rav Yemenu, will Lashon HaKodesh be the only language in the world?
I think
there's still Shivim Lashon, it's 70 languages.
So I was talking about that with, I was thinking about Geula a lot recently. I was trying to, we spoke about this before Tisha B'Av, but our last podcast, right?
It was a great one. You should check it out if you missed it.
How do we make... Really, one of the Yud Gimel Ikrim, one of the 13 principles of belief, it's the Rambam holds. Rambam has in his introduction to the last parak of Sanhedrin, parak Chelik, there are 13 beliefs that are incumbent upon every single Jewish person to have. You can look, you can find them back of Moshe Durm. So the 12th belief is the belief in Mashiach.
Right.
Right. It's the belief that every person has to wait for him every day. He doesn't have to believe he's going to come. He doesn't have to believe he'll come every day, but has to anticipate his coming every single day. So how do we make that part of our life? So I was thinking about different things. So one of the things I was wondering about is, number one, one of the Bachram asked me, I was talking about it, will there be sports? Meaning the Yidden will go to Eretz Yisrael, and we know the Mepharshim speak about the idea that Eretz Yisrael will expand. The Chazal talk about it. Eretz Yisrael will become bigger. And it's not clear that the Eretz Yisrael is compared to the hide of a deer. Apparently, the hide of a deer is very expands. It's expandable. So too, Eretz Yisrael. Does that mean that Eretz Yisrael will encroach on the rest of the world? Does this mean Eretz Yisrael will become bigger itself? I'm not sure what the Chazal means exactly. And many things about Mashiach obviously are unknown. We have to believe. We don't know all exact. You look in the Gemaras, there are many different machleks, and they contradict each other. So we don't know what's going to be exactly. But so they asked me, in the future, so the Yidden will be in Eretz Yisrael, the Jews will be in Eretz Yisrael, but there still will be a Chutz Laretz. So will there still be sports? This Sunday is the kickoff of the NFL, right? NFL season.
Do you have your Nick Foles jersey like clean and ready to go?
So I don't follow NFL. I'm actually a follower of one of the semi-pro football leagues. It's a trucking league primarily based in the Pacific Northwest, and I follow that league as if it's the NFL. You're probably unfamiliar with it.
What's it called?
But it's called the Pacific Northwest Football League, the PNFL. And PNWFL, actually. So... will there be an NFL?
Sorry, I meant to give a drum roll for that. I hit the wrong button.
Okay.
There you go.
Will there be an NFL? What will the rest of the world still have politics? In other words, will Bulgaria still have a prime minister?
Does Bulgaria have a prime minister
I'm
now?
I'm not sure. I'm assuming it does.
Can someone call in and let us know?
But in other words, other countries, I'm assuming they will still exist. I don't know. They will be, the ruler of the world will be Melech HaMashiach.
Mm-hmm.
And it will be, like we say every day in Aleinu, it's a pasuk in Zechariah. Vayayimahu Yeh Hashem Echad Ushmai Echad. His name will be one. The whole world will know him. But does that? I assume there will be governors. Well, I guess we call them governors of other countries. I'm not sure how it's going to work.
So I think I'll try and bring a raya from the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach. We all know that one of the many reasons that Judaism is not a proselytizing religion is because really it's Judaism or whatever the Torah. Judaism is not even a religion. I mean, the Torah lifestyle has something for everybody. There's something for the B'nei Yisrael, and there's something for the B'nei Noach, for the nations of the world. And we refer to those as the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach. And one of the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach is setting up a civil system, right?
So it's dinim.
So dinim, usually we think about it as courts and a court system, but that you whatever that is, that l'chayra, that seemingly will still be in place, or will be in place, not even will still be, will be in place in the Messianic era in the nations of the world. So it seems like there will for sure be a governor in Bulgaria, or at least judges of some sort, you know?
Right. It would seem to be, right. So it seems to, so will there be commerce? Will there be a stock market? I don't know. All these questions are very interesting.
Well, there won't be a euro. I think that's safe to say. The euro will be gone.
I don't even know if the euro will make it until Mashiach comes.
It'll be called Mashiach Zit, Brexit. Do you remember? the one coin will be like a mana, you know, different.
It does seem that Klal Yisrael will be supported by the rest of the world. There are implications of that, and we will have ownership. There will be non-Jews working for us. I know this is very politically not correct to those of you who are in shock right now.
Go to rabbiswithoutborders.com.
I'm not sure what to tell you. But I don't know. There's a lot of interesting questions. You know, we yearn for the coming of Mashiach. We hope for Mashiach to come.
Well, the bottom line is what you said before. Like it's the one thing we know about the Messianic era is that we don't know what it'll be like. Because like you said, if you start at the Tanakh level, impossible. If you go with the Chazal level, the Gemara, and even if you bring in Midrashim, and if you want to bring in Nister. It not any better. Still, it's just going in many different directions. And then you want Rishonim. So you want Rambam and Ravid. You want to try and figure that one out. Good luck. You know. So it's one thing I think we know is that we don't know anything. And I honestly believe that is by design. That is by design because we're not really supposed to know. We're not supposed to. It's supposed to come. I mean, this is the Gemara. Say this in Pesachim, I believe, talks about how where's the Geula going to come from? The place where you're least expecting it.
Right.
Right?
Lo yavla gula achis yashu min a gula.
Right, right, exactly.
Until Klal Yisrael gives up on the Geula, so the Mefarshim say that doesn't mean they give up. They give up on thinking they know how it will be, and they're just a level of acquiescence from Hashem, which I think is the other. Before I just want to drop you one more point. The one thing, other thing we know about it that we don't, besides the fact that we don't know details, is we know it will be good. We have a trust in Hashem that it will be a great, not a good thing. It'll be a great thing. It'll be the ultimate good.
It'll be so much better than what we have now. You think about the ultimate good right now, and it'll be that, like you know, like out west.
I mean, then the Mefarshim do speak about the idea of those two components. Number one, Olam Haba, right? We firmly believe and we know that in the world to come, that there is something unique waiting us. What happens in the world to come when a person dies? We're not clear. Why? Because it's something that's beyond us. We can't see it. We can't experience it. Only the ones who know about it. You have a couple stories in the Gemara of Beshub and Levi that they died and they came back and they saw brief glimpses of Olam Haba. But Olam Haba and Yemei Mashiach share that in common, that there's something that's beyond us, and therefore something that's beyond our perception. And beyond that, beyond our experience, so it's just something that a person waits and anticipates for.
But even where you were going there, Rabbi Spiro, and I thought you were going here, but not quite. But you did remind me of even the breakdown of the Messianic era. In other words, we know. We talk about all these different time periods. You have Yemos HaMashiach, you have Olam Haba, you have L'Asid Lovel, you have Tchias HaMesim. And I'm purposely not translating them because each one when you get into the Mephoreshim is something they're not even clear on what each one is. Where's the overlap? Are these different times? Are these the same times? Is there, you know, I think according to many Mephoreshim, so there's Yemos HaMashiach, and that's what the Gemara is talking about, where it says Ein Bein Olam Azel Olam Vael Shiv Machos Belvad. That basically what it means is that okay, we'll have a King Mashiach. The Mashiach just means anointed one. Means the kingship of David will come back, of David HaMelech will come back, of the family of David HaMelech will come back, and there'll be a certain amount of sovereignty in the recognition sovereignty of that in the world, and then you'll have Lo Yisago Gil Cher Lo Yimdol Milchama, because if everyone recognizes this king as the top of the totem pole, then there's no more war, then that happens. But when we get into sort of the quote-unquote more supernatural stuff, like Techias HaMesim, resurrection of the dead, so that seemingly is going to come after that. You're going to have a time period called
Mashiach. There'll be a time period, right.
And then that's going to come to...
unclear, right, how long after Mashiach comes.
Right,
then.
Exactly.
But it's also interesting, you know, speaking to that point we were talking about before, what will the world government order be like? So you mentioned that famous pasuk, Lo Yisagoyah Goy Cherev, Lo Yimdol Milchama, that nations will not fight other nations. So you wonder once that happens, maybe there won't be elections. Maybe there will just be governors appointed by Mashiach, because the whole reality of the world order will be totally different.
Right. Exactly.
I'm
so
not sure.
Look, this
is leads even to a sports question. One of my favorite things in sports is when they fight. I love nothing like a good bench clearing brawl in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, nothing like it.
And the only thing will
there be fighting in baseball? Will there be baseball? Will there be fighting in hockey? I don't know, hockey without fighting?
Yeah, 1 second. You can't have hockey without fighting. I mean, you know what happened. Yeah. I once went to a boxing match and a hockey game broke out. And the only thing better than a good bench clearing fight in baseball is a pit clearing fight in NASCAR. There's nothing like that. Like the guys like just stop in the middle of the track, they get out, they start throwing punches. The pit crews are going against each other. Well, I grew up in the South, and you know it's interesting.
My favorite thing in baseball is when the bullpens would run in together, and they would run in together, the two bullpens, to get to the fight. I'd always kind of, if you were that
just
serious
fight
about fighting, get into it in the outfield.
Yeah.
Empty out of your bullpen and go fight right there in the warning track. Yeah, I don't like that part.
Yeah, you have to write in. You're talking about the new rules. You should put that in there, that when bench clearing brawls
happen. If you
want to
get, right, in other words, if you're bullpens, in the bullpen
there should be a fine
in center field
should be like
to brawl it
right,
out there.
You know, they always fine the players when they fight, and you'll get like a double fine if you come all the way to the mound. But if you fight on the warning track, you get half the fine.
If you're serious about fighting, you will brawl out in center field for the bullpen members. I'm totally 100%
behind
that,
that
role.
Anyhow, wow. Okay, so this was a lot of fun, Rabbi Spiro.
So now we're holding by Chodesh El.
Once again,
I know we're holding by Navi also.
Right,
we have to get into.
But
Navi.
It is the month of we are into El Dalet El. We're holding by fourth day of the month of El. Wow.
Actually, it's easy this year to Cheshbon El because
it's paralleling September.
Right. So today's September 4th, and today is Dalet El as well. So I want to say over a very interesting statement from the Baal Tanya, which I was put some thought into, and then I found the pshat, which was really what he's saying. Baal Tanya has a beautiful statement. Schneer Zalman, he says, what is the significance of El? So there's many, many different ways you could learn it, but one of the things he says is Hamelech Basada. The king is in the field, right? That Hashem is in the field. So what does that mean? So I think pshat in the Baal Tanya is saying is normally when a king is in his palace, right, and he's sitting on his throne and he's governing from his throne and he has his advisors, you can't just walk in and talk to him. The same way, even in America, you can't just walk into the White House. You can take tours of the White House, one side of it. You can't just walk into the White House and demand to speak to the president. You can't walk into Congress and demand to speak to the leader of the Senate and to have a meeting with people in the Senate. That doesn't work that way. Right. Maybe if you're a person of some distinguished element and you can come in and you could state your claim and you can make an appointment, but you can't just walk in. Right? Hamelech Basada means the king is in the field. Now, why would a person go to the field? So the connotation of field, I think, means over here that a person goes into the field to do work, right? To labor. A person, we no longer live in an agrarian society, but back then when we used to live like that, people would grow their own radishes and their own cucumber and their own onions and their own tomatoes. They would not grow zucchini. So they would grow their own things in the field. So a person was, what the field symbolized, a place of avaida, of melacha, a person would go to do work. Hamelech Basada means that Hashem is in the field. And as long as a person's willing to approach Hashem, approach the field with some readiness for labor. I mean, he has to do some work. There can't just doesn't just mean that like Hashem is now your buddy and he's in the field and you can just call out them. My opinion, my seeming understanding is what the Baal Tanya means is there has to be some level of preparation. But once the preparation is there, the king is in the field and now we can go, we can approach him, and it's the easiest time to relate to him. So it's such a special time of the year. I remember in yeshiva, I'm sure you remember this in yeshiva also, and El people used to feel fearful and used to be nervous about it. And it was very, I found it, especially when I was young, an older bacher told me, don't eat donuts in El. I don't know why he picked donuts, but he picked don't eat donuts. And if you remember, the Nehemiah Neri Shul canteens, donuts from Schmelz, I don't know if they still exist.
Schmelz and Eisman's, yeah, sure.
That's that bakery still exists?
I don't know, but even if they don't, I'm sure the donuts are still from Schmelz and Eisman's.
Amazing donuts. Yeah. And I remember like, why can't I eat donuts in El? So this is really for people above our level, above our pay grade. People like Rabbi Adler, maybe people who are totally devoted to their Aveda and who want to practice some level of precious, fine. That's not for the average person. The average person, El, should be more cognizant of his relationship with Hashem. Do you know what the word cognizant means?
No.
Neither do I. But I read it somewhere.
You know, I'm illiterate in five languages. So
if we can be cognizant of our relationship with Hashem, to know he is more, he's always available, but he's easier available. You don't need to have a great plan. As long as you're willing to do a little bit of work, Hashem is out there, and it makes it a phenomenal month. And it really is. I always feel like one of my kids asked me recently, he's like, you were my age, did you like Rosh Hashanah? I said, no. When I was a kid, I hated Rosh Hashanah. I shouldn't say I hated it, but I really, davening was so hours and hours long.
Yeah.
But every year as I get older, I appreciate it more. I think that's Davaida. And I mean, we'll talk more about the month. One more thing I want to say before we get nervous in El. And I said this to the Bachram the other day. El, sometimes we have an anticipation of we're going to perfect ourselves by Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is about 37 days from now. I believe Yom Kippur is on a Wednesday this year.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so it's exactly 5 weeks from today, Yom Kippur. So a person believes, oh, by Yom Kippur, the next 5 weeks, I will be perfect. When we let off the final shofar blow by Ne'ilah, by Matzah Yom Kippur, a little earlier this year, we'll have an easier fast this year because it's later in October. I believe it's October.
It's October.
It's like October 10th or something. So
October 9th.
We'll be totally perfect, and that's not the truth. We're not totally going to transform ourselves. Transforming ourselves is a process of years and years and years. But the main avoda is that we see incremental growth, just like businesses. I remember I was reading once about Snapple. Right? Some people love Snapple. I'm okay. I'm not a huge Snapple fan, but I like Snapple, some of the flavors. I always thought, I noticed.
You're probably like a mango
Snapples.
Madness guy, aren't you?
I like the peach iced tea. Mm-hmm. I like the way they incorporate peach into the iced tea. That's number one.
So it's coming from Georgia. I like that too.
And I actually just saw they have peach iced tea lemonade. I saw it
too much for me, but
so I would like to try that. I haven't tried it yet. And in the '90s, they had soda.
Yeah,
they had a French cherry soda.
No, that stuff was weird.
I
didn't like
but
it.
But
it's like they're trying to be like New York seltzer, but not quite.
I love that's
what they're trying to do. They're trying to be.
So
New
when
York
I saw it, so anyway, Snapple in the '90s, I was like, oh, they must be a new business. No, Snapple started in the '80s, mm-hmm. and they literally went around. They used to go around to bodegas in New York. And dropped them off, and they took them years and years to become a major company. I think they were purchased by Dr. Pepper eventually, mm-hmm. for billions of dollars. But that happened after years and years. And we have to be the same way. If we assume that we could do Avaida for a short period of time and become perfect, that's not the way it works. But if we allow ourselves to think I can do incremental steps in Avaida, then we really could become a Shalom. It takes years and years, but we could become a Shalom. And Hashem just wants to see that we are on the right trajectory of becoming a better person.
Yeah, I hear that. It's a beautiful idea, and definitely what I'm working towards, at least trying to. You know, I'm preparing a class for our Shmorg next week, which will be next Tuesday at the Federation at 7 p.m. If anyone would like to join us, we have some absolutely wonderful speakers Rabbi Spear, you might even want to bring the Bachram there.
I know your daughter is speaking.
You saw that my daughter's speaking. You know, we start them young in my family.
And Dr. Shlomo Kaufman is
and
speaking.
You saw the ad, exactly.
Do you think I get an email from you to just put it right into my junk mail?
No, I think it goes on its own. So again, the speakers for the Shmorg, this will be Tuesday night, this September 10th, 7 p.m. at the Jewish Federation on Science Park Drive.
I read that thing like it was a rajba. I read every word of it.
So for those of you who didn't, my topic is Are You Serious? The High Holidays Again, From Monotony to Majesty. My wife came up with that title, by the way.
It's a good title.
Dr. Kaufman, Dr. Shlomo Kaufman, who's a fascinating, wonderful, engaging speaker. He'll be speaking on Evaluating Your Values, Lessons Learned from Leadership Training at Cleveland Clinic. And my dear daughter, Miss Ayala Landis, will be speaking on Exercise Your Body, Exercise Your Soul, Power Lift Your Way Through Life. And, you know, that's one of the bonds that your daughter and my daughter have together is they, I think they exercise together sometimes. And that's sort of what she's speaking about, how she lessons she learned from exercising to her own personal growth in Yiddishkeit. And she's a wonderful, wonderful daughter, which is a testament to her mother, not to me. So come join us for that. But I'm giving this talk on Rosh Hashanah, and I'm thinking my theme will be, there's a line that I've said many a times before, I put in some articles I wrote, and it's really questioning or really criticizing, being critical of the three-time-a-year Jew or the two-time-a-year Jew that, you know, I take issue with it. Not that people only come twice a year, but if you're only going to come twice a year, please don't come on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Come on Purim and Simchas Torah. You know, come when it's geschmack, when not to say the Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur not geschmack. I, like you, the older I get, the more I understand and appreciate the davening.
It's a more developed nuance of geschmack, we'll call it.
Exactly, right? Exactly. But with Purim and Simchas Torah, even the undeveloped, the unspiritually developed person can enjoy it and get something out of it and realize how enjoyable it is to be a Jew. So please, this is a message out there, public service announcement. I'm going to say this again on the 10th of Federation. If you're only planning on coming two times a year to shul, come on Simchas Torah. Purim. Don't come on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. And it goes to the root of a problem. I don't know if I'll get into this or not, but one of the big issues with the American development of Yiddishkeit, and there's a lot of great things. We always say this, we have to have tremendous hakar satov, tremendous appreciation to America, and that the Jewish people have been able to thrive in many ways in America. On the flip side, we've had a mass assimilation also, but somewhere in the middle, we have this problem, and it is a problem of the role that the shul, or the Beis HaKnesses, or the synagogue, whatever you want to call it, now takes in Jewish life. You ever notice how when you go to, you know, some of these heritage tours, there aren't these like old beautiful synagogues dating back like 400 years? Like, yeah, you have them, like I know in Kovno there's one. You have them maybe 100 years old, maybe 150 years old, and you have a few and far between, but you don't have like 3, 4, 5. You go to Eretz Yisrael, you don't have ruins of these beautiful synagogues. You have ruins of synagogues, but you don't have anything, you don't have ruins of like beautiful ornate synagogues, because the synagogue is not supposed to be the center of Jewish life. The center of Jewish life is supposed to be the home.
Right.
And it's a problem that in many communities in America that the synagogue has become like the center. So I think
it's even interesting. You look in the Gemara and Megillah, the Beis Medrash has a higher level of Kedusha than the Beis Knesset does.
Right, the study hall is higher than the synagogue.
Study hall is more important. Yeah.
And it's a problem in America that's become the case. We go into it.
Part of what we got it from is obviously from the church.
Part of what we got it from is the church, and part of what we got it from is if people aren't doing it at home, the synagogue felt the need. Like, right. You know, like when you're in Buffalo, for example, and I was in Cincinnati, we had to provide a lot more to our congregants, right, who were coming from a more distant background, and right, they were coming to us for the full package. So we had to give them the full package. And I think even you know, as you slide away from traditional Judaism, it's even more so. And, you know, I don't want to quote the person's name on the podcast, but there's a certain interesting character in Jewish history who, you know, came up with this concept, the shul with the pool, right?
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's, you know.
I actually like that idea. Yeah. I wouldn't mind a pool with my shul.
Anyhow, actually, you know, I am going to mention his name because I want to tell you a funny story about him. This is Mordechai Kaplan, I'm quoting, the founder of the Reconstruction movement. And the only reason I'm saying that is because, you know, I'm not going to give a commentary on this story I'm going to tell, but you can take it for what it's worth, is when Yeshiva University had their 100th anniversary, they wanted to honor the oldest musmach, the oldest person alive with YU smicha, and then they realized it was Mordechai Kaplan, and there went that idea. Okay, no commentary. Let's move on. Just get that story out there for you.
Rabbi Emanuel Feldman from your hometown, from Atlanta. I know you grew up in his shul.
Mm. We were Rabbi Freeman's shul, but he
Rabbi Freeman's shul. He was the satellite of that shul.
Exactly. Yeah.
So Rabbi Emanuel Feldman, I don't know how long he did this for. If it was a permanent change. But at a certain point, he stopped writing down what time Yizkor is.
Yeah, I hear
that's
that.
A very old classic thing. Every old shul used to do it.
Right.
You'd notice all of a sudden that about at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon or 2 o'clock in the afternoon on Yom Kippur.
The place is
all
packed.
All of a sudden, the shul would fill up for about 15 minutes before Yizkor, and then all of a sudden it would empty out.
Yeah.
And Rabbi Feldman said he saw it for a couple of years, and he was disgusted by it. And he said he asked one of the people in the shul, he said, you know, your parents would wake up in the middle of the night for you, right? You can only give them 10 minutes a year. He wants a person in the shul once asked him. A lot of shuls also had the policy of they would sell Kaddish. If someone wanted to say Kaddish with their parents, you could pay the shul a certain amount of money. Someone would say Kaddish for you.
Rabbi
Emanuel Feldman stopped it for the same reason.
Yeah.
He said, you can't give your parents a little bit more than that. You can't come to shul for 11 months, a couple times
a day. There's obviously a place for that if somebody does, like my wife's grandmother, Ola Shalom, who only had one daughter, Ola Shalom.
Yeah, obviously.
Right, there's no son to
say
Kaddish.
He wasn't saying it.
Right,
no.
Yeah,
his point was.
But someone who could do it and doesn't do it. Right,
exactly. He
100%. You know, look. I would just say this, and I'm going to say it again in the Shmorg, but whatever you decide to incorporate of shul on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, and I'm saying this really for everybody, because for all of us, there's different. We have different relationships to davening and the Yom Nerayim davening for sure. I happen to be one of those who really do enjoy it. I really enjoy Rabbi Weinberg's davening. We have Rabbi Spiro's partner in the yeshiva, our Baal Musaf, and he's a beautiful Baal Tefillin. We mentioned Dr. Kaufman before, who's a Baal Shacharis in our shul. It's beautiful. I enjoy it. If I ever get if my mind starts to wander, I'll open up a sefer. But it's a time period that I do really, really enjoy. And even Yom Kippur, I've gotten to that level. And I know my son's not at that level. And I know many people are not at that level. So make sure it's not supposed to be a burden. And it's a problem for us and for our children that it oftentimes becomes that. So make a commitment now. We got 26 days to Rosh Hashanah, that whatever you're going to do about shul, don't make it a burden. And we have opportunities here in town. For example, Rabbi Kovel puts on a beautiful program for those who need a little bit more explanation, and they have classes going on as well. And make sure whatever you do, make it meaningful. I know, as we talked about as a kid, I hated it, but that's because I went to a synagogue where we had a chazan, a real, you know, classical operatic chazan, and I don't like operatic music, and I don't think my father did either. I don't even think my grandparents did, but that's where we went, and that's what they did. And there was one of these, like, you know, there's this old skill that these chazanim had, is that they would stay on one word for like 25 minutes, and then they go, and skip to like 25 pages, and boom!
Right. Remember that old style chazan?
Yeah, exactly.
Remember,
and I've never met anyone who actually likes it. And then you have the choir, which is even worse.
It's the old dar. I agree with you.
Yeah.
I saw. I was in a shul not long ago. I saw. They asked their older person to daven, and he decided, I'm gonna do some chazanas here.
Oh man!
And I saw the face of the people in the shul, and I felt bad for him, and I felt bad for the shul.
It's
out of style.
Yeah,
look, when we say in Pirkei Avos, Al Taseh Tefilah, end of the second parak, Tefilah Sakva. Don't make your tefillah. Don't make tefillah a check off. I got a daven.
Right.
Let me check it
make
off.
Make it real. What if the Rabbanu Shalom dealt with you like that? You know, I got it. You know,
think about your wife.
Dear God, I gave you mincha.
You came home from work or from shiva or whatever you're doing. You come home, you have a break in the day. You come home to speak to your wife for a few minutes. Imagine if you have 3 minutes to talk, the whole time you're looking at your watch. Okay, I spoke to you. Check.
Yeah, done.
I'm ready to move on.
Exactly.
No, we want a relationship with our wife, with our children, or any good relationship to be something that we look forward to, something that we enjoy, and not something that is a burden to us.
Right. And make sure that for the high holidays, for the Yom Nerayim, that's how you treat it. Decide what you're going to do. Make it meaningful, because it's supposed to be meaningful. You know, there's a famous thing that there's been, you know, back and forth in amongst the Kadmonim, but nowadays, you know, virtually everyone does it, and at least in traditional circles, but the Simonim. Right, that, and I know by my wife, this is like her family is always a really big deal, and she still loves it. She just, it's something she really likes, and therefore we like it. We actually do it both nights because my wife likes it so much. But what are the simanim? And the one simon that's famous, that's for somehow is made it through.
Not even mentioned the Gemara. The other simon I mentioned, the Gemara, Maseches Krisis. the siman of the apple. I know you're about to say the apple is not even mentioned in the Gemara. It's from the Arizal.
So it's funny that the one that's the most famous is the apple and the honey, and probably the second most famous is the pomegranate, and my personal favorite is the lamb's head, the sheep's head. Sheep's head bay, that's named for the simen. So what's the whole point of the simen? The point of the simen is not to, you know, eat the pomegranate, eat the apple. It's supposed to be ma'ira you to say the tefillah, to say the prayer that comes along with it. And the idea being is that we start off a year on the right foot, that when we see things, when we see a fish's head or a sheep's head, what does it remind us of? We want to be the head, not the tail. And that's how we think about the world. They're always thinking about the growth. We're always thinking about the connection. We're always thinking about that I can look at a little pomegranate and say, that our marriage should multiply like a rimon, and it's priming us for the year. That we're primed, that we look at things and it connects us, and it connects us spiritually. But if like you're sitting there and it doesn't mean anything to you, then don't do it. I mean, I'm saying this straight out. Look, if you got to hear the Schaefer, make sure you hear the Schaefer. You know, Landis doesn't tell you not to do what's important. You know, but make sure that whatever you do, you find meaningful, and take time, because meaning doesn't come like, you can't just show up that morning and say, okay, I'm going to make it meaningful this year. No. It's going to take time and preparation. If you know Hebrew, great. If you don't know Hebrew, get a nice art scroll machzor. If you need a little more help than that, get Shimon Apisdorf's Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur survival guide. Whatever it is, but do whatever it takes to make it meaningful.
One thing I'm going to argue with you on one minor point, I'm going to disagree with you, is Lamaisa, it is brought down in the Gemara in Croesus. I have everybody lands in a headlock right now. I haven't said that in a long time. It is brought down in the Gemara increases, and it is brought down in Halacha. You should have siman. By the way, you don't have to eat them. Actually, the Gemara mentions just to have them on the table. So I do think, regardless, we should listen to the words of Chazal. But what a person should do is, just like everything in life, just like we would never, you know, like I said, imagine it's football season starting Sunday. No one would watch football all day Sunday without knowing the rules. Right? We want to know the rules. We want to understand the technicalities of it. People really into it read websites about it. They have fantasy leagues.
Fantasies are huge right now.
I'm actually, my fantasy Gaga league is starting next week. So I'm very excited about the fantasy. What button did I
push? Laugh. That's good. Laughing. You nailed it. We'll give you a drum roll too. It's like a bit on the chink. We got both in there.
So it is important to know what you're doing. And I think the more you know about what you're doing, the more you will enjoy it and the more you will appreciate it.
And I think we're saying the same point. I'm not saying scrap what we're supposed to do. Don't chas v'shalom.
Landis last year didn't even come to shul in Rosh Hashanah because he wasn't in the mood.
Well, I will tell you one thing that this year that I think I told you this, not on the podcast, but I did not go or in shul and Tisha B'Av. I left after I davened, and I left after I didn't stay for the kinas, because I decided that, you know, for kinas, which are again a whole, it's a whole different thing. It's not even from Chazal. Right. It's
not a tefillah.
But right. I wanted to make sure that I had a very meaningful kinas. I took the time and I went on Torah anytime, and I was watched my good friend Rav Ephraim Shapiro. This is name dropping. You know, and listened to his explanation of the kinas and all that. So the main thing is what I'm saying. And we're not really arguing, Rabbi Spear. I think we're agreeing that you got 26 days. Take some time, think about it, prepare, and make it meaningful, make it real, because that's what it's about. It's not supposed to be boring and dry and kol nidre. That's not what it's supposed to be like. It's supposed to mean.
I think
we're agreeing on that.
Okay, so I'm gonna say something very short in the parasha for Yossi Gissis, and then we're gonna leave Navi. We have so much to get to a Navi, but we'll have to leave Navi for next week. Just, you want to say something in the parasha? Should I say something in the parasha?
Go for it. Maybe I'll feed off you. We're already ready.
The Yossi Gissis parasha segment.
Segment, yeah.
Just briefly, this week's parasha, it says about the mitzvah of appointing a king. Saim tesim alecha melech. You should appoint a king for yourself. So Rav Tzadik HaKain says this, and many, many of the Mefarshim say this idea, that specifically in this time of El, every person has to be a king over himself.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
I learned today the Hakdama. I'm learning with Mechavrus. I started to say Vechezbna Nefesh, how to make a spiritual accounting. Right. And the first thing he says, a person has to be in charge of himself. The real element of malchus, of kingship that we're looking for, that we're aiming for, that we want to integrate into ourselves, is this idea of being a king over ourselves.
Beautiful. And the same exact idea is right at the beginning of the parsha from the Chidah on the first pasuk in the parsha, Shotrim v'shotrim titin lecha b'chol sharecha, that you should put the judges and the police officers you should place on all your on all your gates. So the Chiddush says over there that the human body has many gates. You have your eyes, which are your gate to seeing, your ears, which are your gate to hearing, your mouth, your gate to eating or speaking, so forth and so on. But you gotta put the shotrim b'shotrim on that. You gotta put the judges and the officers on that to again have control and make sure that you're seeing the right things or you're giving people the ayin tov, as the Mishnah Pirkei Avos says, we want to be the tamidim of Avraham Avinu and give the ayin tov, that we're speaking properly, we're not speaking lashon hara, that we're not listening to lashon hara, etc. So definitely that's another place where the exact same lesson is there, that this time of year is about being real with ourselves and being in control of ourselves. Like Rabbi Spiro's now trying to get in control of the soundboard.
Yes. That's why I think it's better to keep it away from me.
Yeah, I think we got to keep it in the other room now.
Let's wrap it up.
Yeah, I'm glad that we're back in the saddle, so to speak. And I literally am sitting in the saddle here with my spurs on and my 10-gallon hat. So it's been a pleasure, and we want your feedback. I actually just got a text from one of our in the middle of the recording. We got a text from one of our dedicated listeners, Rafi Shank. A big shout out to you, Rafi Shank, and a big shout out to all of our listeners out there. I rarely does a day go by when I don't walk down the street and someone says, "Hey, you're Rabbi Landis from the Rabbi's Podcast, aren't you?" And I say, no, that's not me.
People say to me, "Hey, you're Rabbi Spiro, you're a big loser." So at least you get that.
Anyhow, but we love your feedback. Please leave us a review wherever you're listening to us. Please send in your questions. And pretty soon we're going to get some callers in here like we've been talking about. So in the meantime, everyone have a kasiv v'chasiv teva and a big old fat welcome to the guest.
It's geschmack to be a yid. It's geschmack to be a yid. It's geschmack to be a yid.